Hi, and welcome to the Indie Music Podcast, the podcast for independent musicians and other music professionals. We're your hosts, myself, Matt Denton, also known as Mojo, of Ragged Birds Music. I'm a recording artist and mix engineer. And Douglas Reynolds of Resonance Studio, a mastering and recording engineer.
All right. So are we all on? We're all... Zoom is recording?
Zoom is recording.
Excited. It's the end of my day. I get to hear Mojo's soothing NPR tones.
my dulcet NPR tones.
Yes. I had a German guy praise my NPR tones today, and I was like, hell yeah, I'm like Mojo. The first thing I thought was, me and Mojo.
Yeah, nobody's ever said that to me before, but I now repeat it as often as I can.
I'm so happy. That makes me so glad. When I was, and I realize we have to do the podcast, but just a quick story. When I was young and doing interviews, I'd always start my interviews with "so," right?
Right.
And my mom would read them all because, you know, what mother isn't going to read her 15-year-old son's interviews with black metal bands? And she would complain to me about it until we figured out that Terry Gross from NPR start our interviews with so like, oh, I've lived up to my heritage as a white person from the coasts.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I was gonna, when you say you're a younger person, I'm like, wait a minute, what are you, like 25, 30 right now? I mean, come on.
I'm 24 right now.
Oh, shut up.
just like putting out records, Mojo.
Anyway, so our special guest tonight is Matt Bacon, head of Dropout Media. He is co-host of the Dumb and Dumbest podcast. He is, I guess, a record label executive, man of the world, general, just rogue and cigar aficionado, black metal fan. How are you, Matt?
I'm good. I was realizing going into this, I'm going to have to kind of pull an all-nighter on some ads, but that's okay. That's why we do rock and roll.
Yeah, that's why we do rock and roll. Ads. Yes. That's what Lemmy always said, right?
I mean, you know, so you got to do those all-nighters watching baseball.
Yeah. Are you still watching the North Korean baseball, or are you watching actual American baseball now?
You mean Taiwanese baseball?
Taiwanese baseball. Sorry.
I am. I'm a Rakuten Lions fan. I'm Rakuten Monkeys fan. I like a lot. Also the Uni Lions. It's very cool because there's only four teams, but they play 120 games.
Oh my God.
So you like... And they have cheerleaders, and it's fantastic.
That's amazing. Wait, how deep are their pitching benches? Because
they have five man rotations, but it's also interesting because every Monday is off. It's been a fun, interesting rabbit hole to go down. You know, I definitely have it's a fun way to start your day, with a surreal take on baseball. You know,
yeah.
I don't know. The level isn't super high, but. In the middle of the in the worst of the pandemic, when I was like a lot of people pretty depressed, that was like a thing that really kept me like listening to, you know, fucking dudes from the Taiwanese embassy who really shouldn't be commentating on a baseball game commentate. And just it's because it's fantastic because they're like, they're so proud when they bring in a baseball term. Nice. Anyway, so nobody's cool. Listening to hear me rave about how great Taiwanese baseball is.
Well, hey, this is a conversational, off the cuff kind of podcast. We're good for all that stuff. Tell us a little. I think I covered the bases speaking of baseball, but tell us a little bit about all of the things that you do.
Oh man, there's a lot of things that I do. I like to stay busy.
30,000 view.
I mean, you know, you just gotta keep at it. Basically, I'm a digital marketing guy. You know, primarily with labels like Blacklight Media, which is a subsidiary of Metal Blade Records, Ripple Music, which a lot of people know me in the stoner rock world from, Magnetic Eye Records more recently, Prophecy Productions, Artifact Records. I work with a really big merch company called Plastic Head, which is where, if you see me talking about doing ads for Iron Maiden merch, that's where I'm doing that, you know. Right now, I think we're doing the David Bowie line. We have this whole line of puzzles called Rock Saws that are puzzles of album art.
Oh,
that's been really fun to do.
Oh, cool.
That's cool.
You know, cause it's also a product I can sell to my parents, friends, and they actually think that's cool rather than
so this black metal band burned down a church, but it wasn't really for Satan. It was really more of an Odin thing,
but that doesn't make him a good person, but we all listen to his record and don't think about it, I guess. You know, so it's cool to get to do stuff like that, you know. So I focus on digital marketing. In some of these places, I have a little bit more of an operator role. And yeah, you know, that's kind of 30,000 foot view. You know, I do a lot of one-on-one consulting for bands, you know, and especially in terms of like strategy and stuff, which I think is really valuable because I think there aren't really a lot of like industry people who are at a reasonable level who are giving meaningful advice to bands, you know, who aren't scumbags. You know, I think you see a lot of like, you see a fair amount of dudes who've reached sort of a level similar to mine, charging like $100 for a phone call and not really giving any meaningful advice, you know? And I think, so I really saw a big opportunity for that. And it's a good way to help people.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, and it's nice to have that money in the bank. I'm not going to lie, but you know, so it's kind of a fusion of those things. The main focus being the labels, but there's a lot of independent stuff that makes its way through. And that is usually pretty cool. You know, and obviously, for those who don't know, a lot of this stems out of my Instagram, educational Instagram series, hashtag Bacon Spits, where I do like a daily piece of band advice every day. I think that's where you know me from.
Yeah, well, I know you through your association with Ripple Music, because I mean, you and I have been to shows together.
Yes, we have. I always forget about that.
And but yeah, I really love your Bacon Spits. Just like little, they're just like little quick tidbits of advice, basically for bands and artists. And I kind of wanted to go there a little bit.
Yeah.
You've literally been around the world, and I mean, you've been promoting bands and working with bands forever. And it's such a weird time right now. And I know the big, the big classic advice is always, you know, build your brand in your hometown and start local and play out as often as you can and all this stuff. And right now people can't do that. So what's some good advice for like indie artists right now to help build their brand and build a following?
That's a very good question. I think that what it really comes down to is engagement, 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 engagement. Mm-hmm. You know, and just like how, you know, we tell people to go to shows because you're going to meet people who are interested.
Right.
You know, like you and I think met in person at Mothership, Weed Eater, Crowbar, Corrosion of Conformity.
Yeah.
And like, you know, everyone at that show is going to like at least some of the stuff on Ripple, for instance.
Right.
You know what I mean? Which is cool. But like you need to be there if you sound like a band on Ripple, because you can be meeting people who are relevant, you know. Like one of my
I knew so many people that went to that one show.
Oh my God, it was such a fucking miserable. I was so fucking...
It was crazy.
It was horrible. I just stood outside the whole time and fucking growled and wished I smoked cigarettes. But the point being... The point being, you know, one of my favorite hacks around that is this thing, this guy Michael Walker from this Modern Musician Academy talks about, where he's like, he calls it tour hacking, where what you do is at the big show that's immediately relevant to you, mm-hmm. you go an hour before and you go start talking to all the people lined up, because if someone's lined up an hour before, they really give a shit.
Yeah.
I always thought that was really clever. But the point being, you can't do that now. But what you can do is you can go find all those people who are still hanging out online, on Twitter, on Instagram, in Facebook groups. Facebook groups are really powerful if you're looking at, you know, music where the demographic is over 40, you know, which a lot of stoner rock is. You know, so I think there's huge value there. You know, like there's literally, like it makes me so angry because there's literally people looking for band members in, I don't know, fucking Lafayette, right? Uh-huh. And there's literally, I'm sure, a Facebook group called Metalheads of Lafayette. And they're not talking in there.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying. You know, you have these hyper niche, hyper focused groups of people that are, you know, or you can even just, you know, if you're just trying to meet other stoner rock bands, you can literally go on Instagram and search hashtag stoner rock, and you're going to get hundreds and hundreds of stoner rock bands, and you can filter through, you know. Or what you can do is you can go and you can say, okay, you know, who do we sound like?
Right.
You know, and you can be like, okay, we would really appeal to, and we really sound like fans of, I don't know, Acid King.
To your point of nothing's going on in this Lafayette room where you've got a group that you would think has enough in common where there'd be an ongoing conversation, you know? And it's not happening. And that's the engagement you're talking about, that it doesn't exist there. And I think that's a problem that's occurring for a lot of independent artists, is that they know they need engagement and they know that they need to engage, you know, but they're looking for that, you know, that reciprocal from others that are whatever they are, their fans or their of like interest or whatever that may be. So how do these independent artists actually get engagement rolling? How do you make that into something that, that builds momentum and, you know, and then that Lafayette room starts talking?
A couple things. Well, I mean, first, the obvious answer is create good content.
Right.
Right. You know, right now, my friend Peter Wilmot of the band Ocean Lord out of Melbourne, they're locked down super hard right now. And what he's been doing with the time has been, he's writing, you know, this is a guy, his band just released their first demo. And he's doing these really cool little write-ups of all the stoner rock labels and then posting them in groups. And what he's doing is he's going in, he's being like, okay, like, this is Interstellar Smoke. These are some of my favorite bands on the label. This is some details about when they formed, et cetera, et cetera. And then a ton of people are commenting, cause it's like, wow, I didn't realize this label was that cool. I didn't realize, you know, and he's also making the labels like him a lot more. So when it comes time to pitch that record, they're all going to know who he is already and already think he's cool.
Oh, that's innovative and interesting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but it can even just be like asking a question, you know, like just to see who starts replying. If people, you know, and whoever starts replying, you go start talking to them, you know, or you send them a friend request. Like, these are all things you can do. And even if you don't want to do it within groups, you know, you just go look at, like, you just go talk with like the guy in your scene who's cool, you know, who's like the, and just because, like, I guarantee you there's someone in your local community whose comment sections are always filled up with other local musicians, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. So really, it's not that different from, you know, networking at a, you know, pre or post show scene, hanging out.
And it's exactly the same.
It's exactly the same, but you actually have some, you know, you can actually use with hashtags and in search, you can probably target even better, but you just have to go out there and do it and maybe get over the idea that you have to be there in person and just.
Yeah. And like the best part is like, if someone's being annoying, you can just like not talk to them anymore. Right. You know, like fucking.
Mute or block.
Yeah. Or just, you know, whatever. Like, so there's so many fucking annoying people at shows. You know, it's so great to like not have to, you know, like, to not have to deal with that and like not have to deal with the drunk guy trying to like talk to you about his band. Like, right. That's awesome. You know, like, you can just separate yourself from that on your own now.
We're really good. We got the album's coming out sometime, and here's my business card. And
yeah, and I'm just like, man, I just have like, I have ads to put out.
Now, how much time do you spend putting out? It's like the third time you said it. How much time do you spend out putting ads out?
Normally, it's probably around like a couple hours a day. These past couple days, though, it's been more like 5 hours a day.
And where is this? Like Facebook, Instagram? And what's the best place to put ads these days?
Facebook and Instagram. Although I have some clients who are, you know, pretty justifiably angry at the current situation.
Yeah, Facebook is terrible, but.
And so we're doing more ads that are like either influencers or just like programmatic ads on websites, you know, so you'll see my ads a little bit everywhere.
So like you'll pay like Lindsay Pellis to hold up a Necrit album. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically, you know, and of course, like influencer marketing is a really interesting beast to me because I just wrote an article about this that came out yesterday. On Ghost Cult Magazine. And one of the things that's interesting to me about it is that it's not really like other forms of marketing. Like, you don't generally have a ton of data behind it. You know, and if you're not like really sure that this person is like a good fit for your audience, you know, you're kind of putting yourself at risk.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people don't have a lot of data about themselves, you know? So you have to kind of like trust. And maybe you look at some of the commenters to be like, okay, this looks like the type of people buying my thing, you know? And then also there's a lot of people not commenting, you know, cause like, let's be honest, of every like rock girl model with like 150,000 followers, like a decent chunk of that is like dudes over 40 who don't comment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so like, you kind of have to know that too. And like, that's fine. Like, you know, like whatever, like they know that too. They have their insights. Like, I'm not trying to cast aspersions, you know, but like, so it's tricky because you often don't have that kind of those kind of data points,
right.
You know, but it can also be really powerful because if you get the right person, if you get someone who gives a shit, you know, you're really putting yourself in a position to really dominate. You know what I mean? But it's definitely a tricky game. And then the programmatic ads, you need a fair amount of money and you need the right partner because a lot of times people are fucking idiots.
Yeah, it's hard to, it's a, like a steep learning curve to do that stuff right. It's better to either, you know, leverage like contact or hire somebody who knows how to do that stuff or do retargeting or something a little more straightforward.
Yeah, I think retargeting is really, really powerful and undervalued. You know, I think that if anyone just ran a retargeting ad based on their own shit in the over the last year, they could, and their like music was actually good, they could make money. You know, like retargeting, I think, is like an easy opening salvo if you don't know what you're doing.
Right. Because it's kind of like a built-in lukewarm audience, technically, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's one of the warmest audiences you can get, you know, for being honest. You know, there's a few warmer ways to do it, like getting, you know, for instance, 1 minute video views, you know, but the amount of 1 minute video views you get on social media is really, really low. You know, even if you're, you know, for a long time, I thought I was doing something wrong with based because of how few 1 minute video views I got. And then I got to get analytics on like big labels. And I was like, oh no, like not a lot of people watch a lot of video on social media.
So you mean it should be less than a minute or it should be?
I mean, I'm saying when you're retargeting, you just have to be careful.
Oh, so that kind of gets to my next question, which is what's like something that indie musicians should not do when they're promoting?
Boy.
Like what's like
there's a lot
somebody
there.
Said, I'm thinking of doing this, and you're like, no, absolutely do not do
that. I think something I see a lot of people doing is like I think that shock factor stuff is usually not very good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you're that kind of band, in which case it's great.
Okay.
I think a lot of people don't do enough, you know, like that's more what I see as the problem. You know, I like the biggest mistake is just not doing enough stuff. You know, I think that I'd rather see someone do the wrong thing a lot because maybe at least that'll get people talking.
Interesting.
Do you know what I mean? Well, because so often you have people like put out their record and literally their entire promotion is they make a post the day the record drops. You know, or worse, there are Curtis bitches about this all the time. Curtis is one of my business partners. He does PR with Fewer PR. You know, people who pay him anywhere from $500 to $1,300, right? Which is like a substantial amount of money.
Yeah,
that's and then a
substantial amount of money.
They don't make any social media posts and they don't even post about a day of, or they don't even get it on Bandcamp a day of.
What?
Yeah. Like these are, you know, like this exists. And Curtis is like, I mean, I'm glad to have the money, but like, why did you give me, you know, $1,000 if you weren't going to do anything?
Did they think that he was going to do all that for them? Oh
no, like Curtis has like a contract. Like he makes it clear, you know? But like this is the way it is sometimes, you know. Like people just don't do enough. And I understand it's, you know, it's scary to put yourself out there. You know, it's scary to be, you know, to be pushing yourself to be, you know, there's a certain level of ego that needs to come to be like, look, you should be listening to my music. You know what I mean? Like look at that within myself with like Grid Failure, which is sort of an avant noise project I contribute to with my friend Dave from Earsplit PR, who the first time I met him, we were walking through Baltimore together during Maryland Death Fest when the riots were happening. And I was like 19. We're like walking together and we're just listening to gunshots in the background. I was like, hey buddy, good to meet you finally.
That's a trip.
I mean, you know, it was a bonding experience. But like the point being, like I definitely get shy about sharing some of the Grid Failure stuff because I'm afraid people won't get it, and I'm afraid, you know, people will think it's lame or whatever. So like I understand those concerns, you know, But that's really the biggest thing, is to kind of say, you know, just be out there making a bunch of noise.
Yeah. So what do you think that hump is? I feel like I think we had that discussion recently in my Twitter chat, the DIY music chat, about promotion, how people feel about it and whether people are, I feel like people either think that they're being annoying by, you know, tooting their own horn, or they feel like that they did say it or they did announce it and that was enough, and they're surprised when it doesn't get traction. And different, as you know, different platforms, you have to say things over and over or a certain number of times because of the life of a post. For instance, on Twitter is like, 14 minutes. If you didn't see it in the 14 minutes that it was there, you're probably not going to see it in your feed, kind of thing. Like, you have to just keep saying it over and over. And I feel like a lot of people still have this kind of build it, they will come mentality. And, you know, like, I made an album, how come nobody notices it? You know?
Yeah.
No. I told you I made an album. I think that there's some of that, as much as people going, well, I don't know if people are going to like it, so I don't want to talk about it. I feel like people are like, well, I told you about it once on Monday morning, at 8, and then I didn't say anything because I didn't want to bug you. It's a weird mentality.
But no, yeah. And it's hard, you know, cause it's, you know, I think it's also one of those things where it's, you know, this is kind of a brutal reality, but it's like depressing to realize how little people are paying attention to you.
True.
You know, and you know, because like, and it always shocked, and like, I'm routinely shocked by this. You know, I was literally one of my best friends. I have a daily fucking podcast that I post about every day, basically. One of my best friends, Mark Urselli, who's a producer for John Zorn, among others, didn't realize I had a podcast until like this spring when I invited him on. This is like someone who, before COVID, I probably went to 2 shows a week with him.
Yeah.
And like, we would like this is like what we did. Like, you know, like this, like, you know, and that's like a dude I fucking hang out with all the time, you know, like, and this stuff happens to me again and again, where like, you meet people. Sometimes there are people you really know and trust and are friends with who just don't know about some of your stuff. Because everyone's just being bombarded constantly, you know?
Yeah, we were just having this discussion because Doug, who I talk to all the time, sitting right here, launched a YouTube channel and had a video out, and I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Like, and I follow him on every platform.
We
like,
shouldn't talk
about Facebook that. Friends. We're on Twitter. we're on you know, Instagram together. And I'm like, wait, you launched a YouTube channel and have a video? I didn't even know this. He's like, yeah, I posted about it, but I didn't see it. It's that kind of weird thing where like either the life of a post or the timing or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, or just, you think you promoted it, but you didn't.
And sometimes it just doesn't register. You know what I mean? Like,
you know, there's another aspect of this that confuses me, and that's, and this could be like close friends or whatever. So whatever your network is on social media and people that you have interacted with a long time, or you've actually known personally, getting them to actually interact with and share your content is like impossible. I mean, you know, just to have them do it without prompting them or, you know, asking them to would you share that, you know, it's some kind of like apathy or, you know, just not awareness. You know, I don't know.
I mean, honestly, not to be like super shitty, Doug, you know, I think a lot of it is a quality of content thing. You know, I think that when people post really good content, it gets shared for a reason, you know? And then when people post just like something that's relatively generic, it doesn't get shared for that same reason. You know, like if I see someone posting really good stuff, I want to share their stuff because I'm always looking for content for my Instagram, you know? And, but of course, creating good content is really, really hard. But that's sort of the fuck of it, you know? Like I actually had this exact conversation with my friend Matt Markle of the band Angelic Desolation. Pardon my cat, had a scratching post in the background. And Matt Markle, you know, came to me and said something similar where he was like, yeah, man, like people aren't sharing. And I was like, well, you got to create something really dumb and funny that people will actually see as worth sharing. And then they created this insane promo for a show where they were all, they're like a gore metal band, and they were all naked in a shower covered in blood with a dead baby. Got like hundreds of shares because like it was the most insane thing ever.
Yeah.
And I think, you know,
I kind of believe it, you know.
You know, like that's what it comes down to, is like literally it's just like this has to be shareable. This, you know, like, and this is also something I've really learned talking to a lot of Instagram influencers, you know, and like figuring out like, because they're not just going to post your thing. Like when I try to get Instagram influencers to talk about my puzzles, like the good ones are not just going to post my puzzle. You know what I mean? They want the puzzle. They want a puzzle of their own, and then they want to like take a picture with it in their own distinct aesthetic. You know, so
that's what they do. That's their whole deal. They want it to be on their terms and their setting. I mean, but like, you can lighting.
Just look at like, you know, like on my Instagram. You know, you like, let me look at like two recent. So I posted about like the Last Rain fucking Kickstarter because it was almost completed and I was trying to be nice, but there wasn't really any like good content, you know. But, you know, and that got like 49 likes, which is like very little for me. But then I you turn around and you post like something compelling and cool that like Necrot gave me after that campaign and we get 3 times, you know. And it's, you know, and it's just because the content was cooler, you know, because it was something people actually. Not that people shouldn't like Last Rain. Last Rain are an amazing melodic death metal band. But like when you give someone something that's like curated and makes them look good, that's really helpful to actually getting them to do it. You know, that's why part of how I blew up Bacon's Bits early on was getting all my friends with bigger accounts than me to post about it. Except Bacon's Bits was cool because I was bringing value to their fans. Because I was like giving them an educational tip that they probably wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And it makes the band seem like a cool part of the underground. You know, like Metal Blade Records featured me for like 3 months running.
Well, that's why I share your Bacon's Bits, because I feel like it would be helpful
because
to the people who follow me. It's short, it's targeted, it's single focus tips that could be helpful to people.
Yeah.
And so I reshare that stuff.
Because when you have good content, you have good content, you know? And when you don't have good content, you're in trouble, you know? And I really think you just need to like figure that out. And it's definitely, you know, it's definitely hard, you know, and it definitely requires, like, I don't really have a lot of graphic design skills, you know? So sometimes it's hard for me. And it's something I wish I spent more time doing, but I don't. And, you know, like, it's fucking difficult, but you have to find a way.
Yeah. Well, not everybody needs to be an expert at everything. That's why we have networks.
I mean, exactly.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your podcast that you co-host?
So Dumb and Dumbest is a music industry podcast I run with my friend Curtis Dewar. It's hosted on Ghost Cult Mag, who have been very generous with us. And, you know, we just every day we just try to have a different interesting guest or have a different interesting topic that we get into, you know, get into some interesting deep stuff, kind of break things down for bands in a way that maybe doesn't happen normally. You know, I think you're one of the few other podcasts that sort of does intelligent and thoughtful conversation for bands that isn't just faff, you know?
Wow, thank you.
That's why I really like being part of the Daily Music Business Podcast Network thing, because it's like, oh, here's 5 other podcasts every week that like all also give a shit about us. You know, I think that's really important. You know, because it's really hard. It's really easy to get caught up in the bullshit. So I don't know. That's what we try to do. We just try to educate people, elevate people, you know, have some cool
guests. Is it really a daily podcast? I didn't even realize that.
Every weekday, baby.
How do you come up with enough ideas for content?
We get a ton of guests. Much. And then like, once you get into a groove, like I put out, I think like in terms of like, not like social media posts, but in terms of like content, I put out 15 things a week plus Bacon's Bits. So like there's a lot of different places to pull from, because there's like 2 music industry articles a week, and then the Bacon's Bits, obviously, and then like this, I don't know, just like the people I'm talking to and the consulting calls and the, you know, like there's just so much you can dig into and like put your fingers into.
Yeah.
You know, it's all there, you know. So once you get into the habit, I think it's not that hard.
Are you still having fun? This is my next question now. I mean, after hearing
you
all
know,
that.
That's something I think about a lot, especially right now. You know, I think that in normal times, you know, a big part of the reward was like, okay, this really sucks and we're tired all the time. But like, hey, I got to, you know, talk to Phil Campbell before he played with Motorhead, and I got to watch Motorhead play in front of 80,000 people from side stage. Like that was really cool. You know, that was like the reward for like bleeding out your eyes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, you know, there's still exciting stuff. And that's kind of the thing is like, I'm still able to wake up and be like, wow, I fucking worked on a Zakk Wylde record today.
Yeah.
You know,
that is cool.
Yeah. You know, and I think there's still this just like deep set obsession with music that I have, you know, even if a lot of that isn't metal these days, but is like, I think you've seen a lot of my like Louis Armstrong tweets and my like 20th century American classical music tweets.
I did see that today. Yes.
You know, like, I'm, you know, like there's a lot of things I'm passionate about that aren't rock or metal. And I find a lot of those things a lot more interesting than rock or metal, quite frankly. You know, but
nothing wrong with that.
I mean, you know, but it's still fun in that regard. Like, I still like realize that, like, ultimately I realize that, like, if I worked in an office, like, I would be the weird guy who likes music too much.
So, yeah, that's me.
Exactly. So I'm like, okay, well, it's like a little bit better that I'm at least like in a situation where, you know, maybe other people aren't like gonna like sit down with me and talk about Copland and like maybe some of the really interesting things that like being a gay composer in the 20th century. And, you know, like maybe they don't want to get into that with me, but like, you know, but like, okay, we could have like a long conversation about like Jack and Dino recording the Nirvana demo kind of coming out of the ashes of Fecal Matter and like talk about like that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's like still an acceptable way to live.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that if I don't get to do that, if I don't get to, you know, that's like half of my friendship with Mark Urselli, who's, you know, one of the people I hang out with the most, is like, oh, fuck, I actually get to know someone who worked with Ornette Coleman now, and I can ask every single question I've ever had. And it just, I'm amazed he isn't bothered by me. You know.
Yeah. I think some of us, we just like music so much that we just happen to have the privilege of talking about it with other people who like it. That's, I mean, Doug and I talk about this all the time. And this is like our favorite night of the week where we get to just like chill and talk about music because that's what we like to talk about.
No, exactly. And then you talk, and then you meet someone who doesn't, and you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like okay. I don't, we are, do you like baseball? Because right. otherwise I'm out of conversation topic, bro. Right. Like, have you been to Australia? You know, like these are, this is what it is, you know? But I think there's a lot of value to working in something where people are really obsessed.
Agree. Doug?
Yep.
I didn't want to start. We're getting close to the end of our time here. I don't know, any final questions or thoughts?
Follow me on Instagram at bacons.bits. Daily music industry advice. Lots of good stuff. Sometimes dank memes. Sometimes like gardening because, you know, I'm really pale. and it'll be cool. I'll reply to your comments and maybe say something snarky and or threaten to ban you, but not actually.
There you go. Very quickly, you prefer Instagram or Twitter?
They're different beasts.
They're different beasts. You know, if somebody was going to follow you in one place, where should they follow you?
Definitely Instagram.
Definitely Instagram.
Way okay. more dumb shit on Twitter.
Way more stream of consciousness on Twitter, but that's
what I know. Sometimes you just got to be like, look, this is my putting acid on my tongue face at 5:30 a.m.
Totally. Well, thanks so much for coming and hanging out with us.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you guys for having me. It was really, really fun. I really appreciate the chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And where are you now? What time zone are you in?
I'm in Brooklyn. You know,
Brooklyn. Oh, okay. You're not in London yet?
Not in London yet. Next month, baby.
Next month. All right. Love London.
I'm very excited to be renting an apartment from one of the singers for Quincy Jones.
Wow. Nice.
Like when that kind of came together, I was like, oh, so many jazz points, Mom.
Very exciting.
What I wanted to ask, actually, I had a question for you, Mojo.
Yeah.
Because you do like collaborative records, right?
Yep.
I'd really love to do classical guitar on one of them at some point.
All right. I'll keep you in mind for that.
I've been trying to like, I've like in spurts tried to be like more aggressive with my classical guitar playing and like doing it places.
Yep.
You know, like my friend Nathaniel Larischet was kind of an inspiration. Like he got to work with like Agalloch and stuff. So I'd like to maybe do more of that where I can. So, you know, if you have something, like I have an okay setup and
all right.
I enjoy making noise with the sound hole.
I will look for an opportunity and let you know.
Yeah.
Thank you so
much. Thanks everybody for listening.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Doug. Thanks everyone.
Thank you guys. I really appreciate it. It was really lovely getting to talk to you and hear your dulcet NPR tones.
Likewise. All right. We'll talk soon.
All right. Cheers.
Thanks everybody.
Bye.
Cheers.
Are we still here?
Yeah. Not even a minute. It's going to cut us off any moment.
Are you going to edit this bit out?
Yeah.
I kind of want you to leave it in, though.
Yeah, it'll just cut us abruptly here, so.
Okay, well, thank you guys so much. It really does mean the world, and I really needed this break in my day, so
thanks. Right on. Thanks a lot, man.
You guys take care, okay?
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for another episode of the Indie Music Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, leave us a comment or a review and share with your friends. Hit us up on our website at indiemusiccast.com. Find myself on Twitter at Mojo's Army. Find Douglas on Twitter at Rezo Studio. Thanks. Until next time, keep creating.